and see they haven't for how long, Jim? Long time, you know? I mean, who was some of the person you said Dwight Eisenhower said? What did he say?
Well, he warned people about the military-industrial complex, and essentially the military-industrial complex rules America today. I don't want to get into too much.
What did you tell me what Mitchell said when he left office?
Oh, I just said that, you know, the greatest prophet of the 60s wasn't Bob Dylan or Timothy Leary or Martin Luther King. It was John Mitchell, who was Nixon's attorney general, and when he was being indicted as a felon and was convicted, he said that this country's going to go so far right, you're not even going to recognize it, and he was completely correct on that.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happened. And then they lead people like sheep to believe it's a Jew, Arab, Christian, whatever, and it's not all the time. They're just being deceived.
Well, on a variety of levels, again, with knowledge and understanding, you know, a really great media theorist by the name of Joseph Goebbels, who was Hitler's minister of propaganda, said, you know, if you tell a lie often enough, people will believe it. And that they're.
That's
a truly profound truth about a whole variety of things, not just political things, but that's exactly right. You just keep repeating and parroting the same thing over and over again. I mean, you're talking about 9/11. And I'm not especially a political person either. And I mean, on one level, I see all this as it's just one group of sleepwalkers against another group of sleepwalkers. And I can sort of distance myself from these things. But at the same time, I'm a citizen of the world, you know, and it's horrifying. There's people being killed. And it pisses me off that all these liars are in charge of things. So I go back to the Kennedy assassination, you know, and I don't think I know that many things in the world, but I know one thing. I know Lee Harvey Oswald did not kill John Kennedy by himself, you know. I mean, I know that. I've studied this for 40 years, and the same thing, you know. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. No, I'm somebody who actually looked at the evidence, and only a moron would conclude that he did this, you know. Like, I mean, but the same lies have been told over and over again, and, you know, people.
That's part of the disinformation process. They call them conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, exactly.
Think they're just theories instead of what it really is the facts of conspiracies.
Yeah.
The facts of conspiracies.
Yeah,
and they say, oh, conspiracy theory. But no, it's not conspiracy theory. It is the facts of a conspiracy.
Yeah,
that is what it is.
It's the same thing as that all sorts of people in business, they came up with this lovely term a few years ago, junk science. And what they mean by...
What's it called? I didn't catch it.
Junk science. And
junk science?
Junk. Junk.
Oh, junk science,
yeah, like... And what that was used to do was to deny the reality of global warming, you know, amongst other things. But anything that threatens, you know, your aerosol cans may be destroying the ozone layer. Junk science. It's just a dismissive term, but I mean, you know, people invoke it. Oh, that's junk science. And you know, rather than thinking about these things or actually looking at them and trying to, as you say, look through them and see them for what they are rather than just in terms of what you've been conditioned to believe about things. People just, oh, that's just junk science. I mean, now, of course, you know, even the skeptics, I think, are mostly convinced, although there's still some about that the weather really is, the global warming
I think the problem it tends in society is that people are so helpless because the monster, the beast, is so huge and is so in control that everybody is rendered impotent. That's what's happened. So even when people begin to realize one little element of it, it's like, well, what am I, you know, I can't do anything about it. You know, we'll trust our politicians, but our politicians are impotent.
Yeah.
The legal system is impotent. The whole thing is impotent. You know, but we've been deceived. You think you live in a democratic country. You think America has these high ideals. It's a deceit. It's not the reality of the truth of what is existent in America today. Never has America been at such a low level of moral integrity in the country. I mean, it's disgusting. When I see this film come out, World Trade Center, it disgusts me. Obvious deception and conceit in that. It's horrible. I don't even want to go into it. My wrath goes through. I'm awakened to see that it's, holy smokes, how could the little sheep be, go along like that, be so deceived, all while the black magician wants to take their souls to the moon and feed off them and not let them know of the higher life. I can't believe that. But you know, another really interesting insight I had, I was thinking of what Uspensky said in Talks with the Devil. Have you ever read that, Jim?
Yep.
And what he says about the devil is very interesting, because he says the devil doesn't kind of really mean to be mean. It's just the devil is forces from a lower level that don't realize there are higher levels.
Hmm.
So when someone is on a higher level, it kind of disappears from view from the devil, who wants to bring it down to the moon. So the devil, in a way, he only perceives the lower dimensions, and within that realm, his activities and logic make sense, because he doesn't realize there's this higher realm. Very, very interesting kind of alternate perspective on the nature of the devil.
And in a sense, too, I mean, another way he talked about, like, the devil really isn't an entity, but it's more an inherent property of a mechanical consciousness, that the lower levels are conscious. It's sort of inherent. It's kind of another way of saying just what you just said, in the sense that it's like it's just a property of that level of consciousness. But I wanted to ask you something, or comment on you're talking about these experiences you've been having, and you were saying it's very difficult to kind of describe this. And I remembered the comment that Uspensky made when he said, you know, there in Gurdjieff's system, there's the lower centers which govern our functioning in the lower states of consciousness, are in sleep and in normal waking consciousness, which Gurdjieff says is waking sleep. But then he says there's two higher states. There's self-consciousness, which he describes as the right of human beings, but something that they don't normally have, which they really should have. And then there's objective consciousness. And Uspensky says, like, we have two higher centers. There's the higher emotional, higher intellectual centers, in which we can be conscious in these higher dimensions and higher realms. And Uspensky says it's difficult to describe them because, like, the perceptions and the knowledge and understanding of these higher centers, because it would be like a blind man trying to speak of colors. Like, it's something
beyond your comprehension.
Beyond comprehension, any normal frame of reference. So when you try to reduce this, it's like the great conundrum that really faces all mystics when they're trying to describe their mystical experience. I mean, you're talking about having a tremendous mystical revelation, and you're trying to describe it, but in a sense, like, you know, one of the aspects, you can't do it on some level. You can sort of capture some of the sense of it. But one thing that you said to me, which sort of made me think, was that you said that you felt like, I think you said that you felt like things around you were even moving, that you felt like that you were vibrating sort of like at a certain level. Am I getting this right? Or
I was trying to express at one point, like, what happened was, the whole thing was a series. The first level of what happened was, I began to learn the truth of 9/11, and I was absolutely horrified. It was like it broke the spell in me.
Now, when you say,
I knew there was question about it, but again, I'm not political, so I didn't.
But you're
really
saying, but you're saying that you learned this with your mind, like you just
well,
in your normal
again,
state.
It's like consciousness is knowing together. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I'm a very intelligent person. I got like a broad knowledge of all areas of science, philosophy, religion, anything. Okay. Already. And then I'm a scientist. I'm a PhD psychologist. I'm a forensic psychologist, a clinical psychologist. I've written 5 books. So I got a pretty, my mind is already sharp kind of. And then I started looking at the evidences. And then I couldn't believe there are evidences are all right there. How could you need more? And then I listened to all the people talk about 9/11 and all the different theories. Everybody is so confused because they can't grasp the whole of it. What I was then able to do is somehow through this process of learning the details and realizing the whole, it kind of expanded my awareness into perceiving within the spiritual plane into the dynamics of this whole of what is currently happening. So I can tell you what happened in 9/11. You know, I don't want to go into it. It's not my place, and it's not, you know. But, I mean, I know how it was done, you know, and I know how we were deceived. I can see it now. I can see the media of lies. When I watch the news now, I can tell when they're lying. It's like they say of Christ that he could perceive in spirit what was within people's hearts. And now I can just cut through stuff that I know is just falsity that everybody's tied up into. And I see disinformation that's that's wrong, it's nothing to me. I just pierce right through. My mind is like a sword. It's just I won't not speak truth. And so I hear these people say, oh, it's just conspiracy theory. No, it's not conspiracy theory. It's the facts of a conspiracy. You have to think different. People are so conditioned and programmed by the media, by their TV. People waste their life in front of TV so much, all this senseless stuff that's, you know, in awakening, we have to learn to live in the real world, you know, and and in a way, where people are so filled with titillation and senseless things that if you begin to wake up, all those things mean nothing, and you don't even, I can't even sit in front of the TV now. Watching news makes me sick because I just see how, I just see it, a ministry of lies. There's no other thing. You know, they're kind of sowing fear and terrorism and creating Arab scapegoats, and the whole thing is so sickening. So my first, as I began to understand 9/11 and began to grasp the enormity of the problem from this higher level of intelligence within the spiritual realm, where your mind can kind of penetrate and know things, it's like you have access to all these things, and you're filled with knowledge. It's a remarkable process.
Well,
that was part of what I was describing. And then I opened up the more. So I went through first, like, I felt like I was in an Orwell nightmare, in the Ministry of Lies, and the secret police everywhere, and their electronic surveillance of the life of man, and all these. And I felt, oh, my God, it's horrible, it's horrible. And I went through a period of kind of paranoia and fear and, like, you know, as I realized it, and then I worked through that and kind of got beyond that through the days, and I had different levels of higher clarity. And then that dropped away. In a way, to feed into that and get caught up in the fear and terror, that kind of feeds the monster. There is a way in which we can be free of that, and then almost, I mean, I feel so free now. I could explore the universe if I had time. But I don't have time. I have work to do here. That was some of what I was describing. The other thing I was describing, Jim, was, oh, I've had such illuminations about the nature of the tree of life and the qualities and things like that, but too complicated unless people are brought along to understand it. But the other thing, oh, yeah, you asked me about, as I was experiencing in this higher realm and realized all these things, I began to feel the wrath of God within me. Like how my own wrath was most when I see this movie World Trade Center, like an obvious intentional deception of the sheep to mass hypnotize them in the name of patriotism and things like that when they know the truth, okay? And it makes me so furious. How can you kill people and try to turn it into an Oscar award, you know? Like, this is incredible. And, you know, and our kids go to the movie theaters, watch this propaganda, you need poison popcorn. I mean, the more I saw it, it was like the wrath of God. How could you do such horrible things? And just for what? For greed? And that's what it is, money, sex, and power. People that sacrifice human lives for money, sex, and power. And so I realized what a psychopathic element has arisen in modern society. And in a way, it's like scum rises to the top, and that's what's happened in Western society. The scum has risen to the top, and the people don't even know it. They think that at the top are their elected politicians. It's so funny. So it's been a wild, wild week I've had.
You know that, well, a couple of things. You know that Oliver Stone made the World Trade Center movie, eh?
Yeah.
And you know that Oliver Stone made the movie JFK, for which he was completely vilified, you know, thrown under the bus by everybody because, oh, how dare you, you know, tell this story about this complete bullshit and all this stuff. And, I mean, he was criticized widely, but the more, and even like somebody like me, I thought, you know, I thought there were various problems with the movie, but, you know, the more I think of it, the more I think he was kind of right about the JFK. But
I don't even know what his thesis or, I saw the movie, but I'm not sure I really grasped it at the time.
But did he
kind of say who he thinks
did
it?
Oh, yeah, well, he said it was a coup d'etat by the intelligence community that they were behind the assassination, that it was planned. And
wow.
That
I didn't know that. I'm shocked that he's the same one who would then come out with this.
Yeah, that's what I say. It's completely ironic because, you know, when the word came out that he was making a movie about the World Trade Center, all these people on the right were all mad and saying, oh, this is horrible, and he shouldn't be allowed to do this and everything. And then he made this movie, and now they're all saying, well, even though it was Oliver Stone, it's a great movie and everything, and it made, you know, blah, 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 whatever. That's kind of irrelevant but at this point. But what I was going to ask you about was that when I was trying to get to like, you know, what you experienced, like the actual experience of this, because, like, you know, when you were saying that things were pouring into you, it reminded me of other descriptions I read of people having mystical experiences where they were like flooded with knowledge and understanding of things. And that sounds like what you're sort of describing, like that mm-hmm. you had this kind of experience. Was it like it over several hours, or was it like, you know, several days, or did it kind of
I
come
would say
and go?
At the moment about a week to 10 days.
Yeah, so it's just...
And it's just deepened and deepened and deepened.
Is it like continuous, or does it kind of come and go? Like, do you have some sort of moments?
You know, like at times I come down into my normal state. Like today I went out and I cut the lawns and tried to come down and do housework and stuff like that, to come down and to let it go. Because it's like Gurdjieff says, once you attain these higher levels, you don't need to be in it all the time. Like, it's there, it's accessible, and in a way, you can actually, I mean, more and more, it's integrated into my normal awareness. Mm-hmm. So my normal awareness has been elevated, but not to the high, high elevation states that I've experienced through the last week where, I mean, I just experienced incredible things that is hard to explain. And I just felt I was like channeling this divine knowledge and wrath and will, like having revelations. I mean, I wrote a book. I mean, look at what's on my site. I say revelations, trials and tribulations. We in our society are at the time of the end where there's going to be huge disruptions in our society. The beast has sensed its own demise. It's sealed its fate. It's put all its crimes into a movie and put it before the human race. If there was any intelligent person in the world who could take these fellows to court, it would be very interesting. You couldn't lose your case if you had an impartial judge who'd listen to the evidences and not be a goofball. People have such small minds. They can't grasp the full horror of what is being done in this society.
Well, think about this, like 35 years ago when you were training to be a clinical psychologist and you had a description, a case file, that somebody was having the kind of experiences that you'd had and that, you know, you were going to see them, what do you think your initial impression would be? Would you think that they were delusional?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I would suspend judgment in a way. I mean, I often did, because you don't know what a person, they're confused, because it's like Gurdjieff said, if you woke a normal person up into a higher state of consciousness, they would go mad.
Yeah, they'd be overwhelmed
okay?
by it.
So this guy comes in and he's mad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so maybe he has glimpsed some of this and he has no way of comprehending it. So it drives him mad, like he's crazy, he sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you speak to me, I have this higher knowledge, but it hasn't incapacitated my lower mind so that I'm going around. I mean, I get worked up about it because I feel strongly about it and such powers move through me. But I'm not going out like a lunatic. You know, I'm pretty smart fellow, believe me. You know? So it's lucky, because of my work on myself over 30 years, that I can now sustain awareness in these higher realms and channel it down in a productive way and still be sensible and reasonable. I mean, people can't understand what I say because the vastness of my knowledge is so beyond the little pea brains that most people have who have been led along like sheep. So they can't comprehend what I say. It's so beyond them. You have to climb the inner ladder of realization to understand higher truths. You can't understand higher truths in the normal low state of human consciousness. You just can't do it. So you have to slay the mind, learn to live in the heart, and with time, that opens up higher senses to you. These things are latent within all people to have these inner experiences.
This kind of goes back to, you know, when we began discussing the evolution of your career, and I asked you a couple of programs ago, like, you know, the first question I asked you is that, you know, you describe yourself and your website and your books as a mystic scientist, and most people would regard that as an oxymoron, or at the very least think it's kind of a peculiar term, eh? And then you started describing your career, and you went back to when you were a doctoral student and became interested in the fourth way by reading In Search of the Miraculous, you know. And I said that one of the reasons, like, I'm going to write a book about the evolution of your career because first of all, I want to present the evolution of your ideas. Like, I want to present your ideas, but I also want to present the evolution of your ideas because it came in a definite order, and they, you know, and they built in a certain way. And one of the things that one of my aims was that, you know, there's a statement by Stephen Hawking about mysticism, and he says, I think mysticism is a cop-out. And it's for people who can't, I'm not sure if I might be...
can't understand the mathematics.
Yeah, well, you don't say it. Okay, I was going to say, I thought I might be confabulating with another guy, but it's for people who can't do the mathematics, you know? But that's a pervasive attitude amongst... Western scientists and people who bill themselves as skeptics, is that mysticism is really for people who are intellectually incapable of grasping science, or who have a sort of a need to fulfill themselves through some sort of idea which imparts divine significance to their lives, or some sort of, you know, megalomaniacal ideas about who they are and where they fit in the universe. And I mean, then I look at, you know, like, I look at your career and I look at my own life in terms of the 30 years that I've been studying mystical teachings. And Stephen Hawking might be a real smart guy about physics, but he's a moron when it comes to mysticism. I mean, he doesn't know anything, you know, and I'll debate him on it, you know, if he wants. But
just stop for a second while you're talking, just to share something here. Like, you see in a person like Stephen Hawking how imbalanced they are in their development.
Yeah.
And they try to understand the mysteries of life only through developing the mind and faculties of the mind. Now, if someone is so emotionally underdeveloped, as Stephen Hawking is, just from reading aspects about him and what he's like, then they don't have this deeper knowledge. And so they're dismissive of it. This distinction between science and religion, see, that's how people have been deceived. This dualistic mind is, science is different from mysticism. Mysticism is really the ultimate science. But science, modern scientists in their little pea brains can't comprehend mystical teachings. It's beyond their level of comprehension. So they're dismissive of it, even when they've never studied it, they know nothing about it. But it's a word, they're mysticism, you know, misty.
Well,
they're dismissive, but they know nothing about it, really.
It's, again, it's like what I was mentioning earlier. It's that in mysticism, they name something, and then they think they understand it. But mysticism really covers an incredibly huge body of knowledge and of practices and disciplines and explorations and examinations of the human condition, of the universe, of the nature. I mean, it's, you know, you could study 15 lifetimes and not grasp it all. I mean, somebody's got a PhD in astrophysics from Caltech, you know, really hasn't really achieved anything more than somebody who truly understands any mystical teaching, in my opinion. And that's just the intellectual side of it. I mean, we talk on these programs, and you're providing an intellectual exposition of these ideas, but the whole other side of it is that this is the map. We're trying to point to the reality, which is to be realized by not just knowing things, but understanding them and experiencing them. We're a couple of intellectuals, but that's what I was trying to get at, like, a little bit when I was asking you questions about your experiences. Like, you're having this immediate apprehension of these truths. You know, you're not reading about them, you're not thinking about them, you're experiencing them directly, which is a completely different way of knowing. It's a completely separate epistemologically, which is the science of how we know, from modern science and modern thought. But it doesn't mean that it's not valid. In fact, I would argue, as you would argue, that the mystical mysticism really is the ultimate science because it's the most comprehensive science.
Yeah, I'll give an example that, going back to my early work, that I think most epitomizes what we're saying. And that was a discussion by Swami Prabhupada of the yogic Vedic tradition. And he said, oh, you earth people, you think you're so clever. You know, you blast up and spend billions of dollars and you send a little tin can up and land on the moon. And you think, you know, that's such an achievement, which in a way, I'm not denying that. But then he goes on to say, but he says, to an advanced yogi, they can travel in their subtle bodies both to the planets of the material sky and even within, in the higher dimensional realm, to the planets within the spiritual sky. So imagine instead, in the future, how is a person going to get to Venus? Okay, well, what if you don't need rocket ships and blast off, but you could actually transport yourself there through traveling through higher dimensions? Okay, what would be the more advanced science? Obviously, you know, I mean, if I could go into meditation and move through higher dimensions of space through meditation and developing my higher being bodies, well, that's obviously more than, you know, thousands of people kind of together making the tin can that they send up. What's more advanced? You know, it's obvious if these... Remember, I posed that in my original writings on the problem of God's contracting universe. Because when I read that, I was shocked. Really? He claims yogis can travel in their subtle bodies to the planets and in the universe? And so I always kept my mind, didn't dismiss it. I said, well, if that's really true, oh, boy, mysticism would be the ultimate science. They're way beyond anything that the pea brains have, way beyond. So that's where I've arrived at now. I realize it's true. I'm not that I've traveled those places, but I know that's accessible to me now in a way I never understood before. To me now, that's very reasonable that we might travel. That's the space travel of the future, is learning to develop these higher faculties of a human being and the awakening of consciousness. And then the universe, as this happens, it just becomes so incredibly beautiful, and knowledge is poured into you. You set your mind to something and things are revealed to you about those things. This lady we're going to have on in a few minutes, I went on a chat group and she came in talking about the Bible, and as she spoke over this little chat group, as she explained certain things, I just felt the knowledge being poured into me. It's like revelation, you know, directly. And you see it. You see the truth of it. So there are these higher modes of knowledge, and that's what and people have the completely wrong idea. They think people in life are mainly centered in the mind, in the head. That's what Gurdjieff called the formatory center. The center of your personality, your persona, the outer self, but your deeper self is within the heart. And the mysteries of the heart and the science of the future is about the mystical dimensions of the human heart. And once people begin to realize this, whoa, the mysteries of life, you realize what a treasury there is in God's infinite being. And these potencies are within ourselves if we could learn to tap them. But modern man has been so weakened by a whole educational system which has even intentionally propagated false knowledge, trying to convince people that consciousness is produced by the brain in the head. It's a perfect example. I call that the head doctrine. So it's the head doctrine of modern science or the heart doctrine of mystical teachings. And to me, there's absolutely no doubt. The little pea brains are spiked down. There's nothing in the little pea brains. There really isn't. You know, you open in the heart and learn to live in the heart, and mysteries you can't conceive will be revealed to you. But it takes time, and you have to climb that inner ladder of self-realization to attain these levels.
It's like, Lao Tzu says that the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, and it's like when I was just reflecting on when we both started studying the fourth way in 1976, that you have to unlearn a lot, and we were both psychology students, and we had to when we started studying these basic ideas, like the very central idea of the fourth way is that our waking consciousness is not a proper consciousness, but is rather a waking sleep, and that you know that we had to study ourselves to understand this, and that we shouldn't just believe this, but we had to actually study ourselves and collect observations, and we had to try to remember ourselves, and just to hold the experience, I am here, and we tried to do that and realized that, oh, that should be easy to do, but it's impossible to do. Well, it's almost impossible to do, and it disappears. And I would say that the self-remembering as a method is the greatest psychological experiment ever devised. And once you do it, it just reveals to you that real psychology begins, as Uspensky says, when you try to remember yourself and fail, but you realize that with effort it is possible to do so. And
to be more conscious.
To be more
consciously awake and present.
I'm reading this book currently that we talked about the last program called Conversations on Consciousness. Sue Blackmore, a British psychologist, talks with all these leading theorists on consciousness in the world, probably about 20 different people, neuroscientists and philosophers. And not one of these people that I've read, I haven't read the whole book yet, so I'll take this back, but I've read half of it, I guess, and not one of these people even comes close to having any kind of understanding of the, like what I would call a basic factum of consciousness, is that you try to remember yourself and you can't. And like Uspensky says, the whole Western philosophy has missed this truth. And you know, this is a central tenet in mysticism, I mean, in esoteric teachings. It's in other teachings. I think Gurdjieff, in a way, is really good for the modern mind because he spells it out in a way that's very approachable and you can understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing like the Gurdjieff teaching. It's so clear. It's so objective. It's so practical, eh?
Yeah.
The centers and the levels of consciousness and such.
Before you run, you've got to crawl. You know, you have to you have to start with these very basic efforts to just realize that, oh, things are not what they seem. It's like that wonderful fairy tale, eh? And I keep thinking about it when you were talking earlier about the emperor has no clothes, you know? And everybody's cheering his new clothes. And this little kid's there, and he said, well, the guy's naked, you know? And everybody's, no, he's got beautiful clothes on. No, he's naked. No, look.
That was that reminded me of my son who showed me the 9/11 movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like he and his kids, they were 14 years old in high school, they all saw it.
Yeah.
They were horrified. Yeah. Now, here I was an adult, and it's like my son, 14 years old, he brings it to my attention. Like, Dad, what's this kind of, you know, what's happening? And then I applied myself to it because I'd never applied myself to the whole thing, eh? Just because of my other interests in mysticism. But then I kind of woke up to it. And then that waking up to that kind of allowed me to penetrate into these higher realms where I could grasp the broader horror of the situation.
Yeah, very interesting that interest in something like this in the world, you know, in the normal world, should lead to such a otherworldly experience for you. You know, for somebody who strives to awaken in the heart, it's kind of odd. I mean, maybe it's coincidental. I doubt it, but I mean, the timing of it is all very peculiar to me. Like, I find it very interesting that it happened around something like this. We're not around something to do with physics or psychology or even forensic psychology. You know, but it's rather around something that's really not an interest of yours or a focus of your concentration. You know.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting how that happened. As I see it in retrospect, it is for so long. Like, I've been. They say, like, there are different levels of samadhi,
right?
Okay, but the all levels of samadhi, the lowest level is becoming established in the heart, and you have to become established in the heart first, and then you can experience higher levels of samadhi or realization. but you it has to be based on being established within the heart. Okay, so for years now, you know, I've been working at the teachings of the heart doctrine now. I mean, I originally published that book 20 years ago, you know, and I still refine it and refine it. So for a long time, I've worked towards my own self-realization and believe I've become so established in myself. Okay, but then what happened, so I attained that level of self-consciousness, and then this was the shock. Because with that level of self-consciousness and a pretty sharp mind I have, and knowledge of all areas of science and law and forensics and everything, then I apply with my expanded consciousness, and then I began to investigate this thing, and I could began to, all of a sudden it just all fit together, and I acquired this kind of, my mind is so sharp, I can just cut away these lies and deceit and see through into the truth of things. So it's, for me, an incredible kind of experience. And now I just see the lies and things. I turn the TV on, watch the news, and it's a lie. I see right through them. I know what's in their hearts. I can see the stress on their faces as they lie. You know, it's horrible for these people who live within all these institutions where these things are going on, but everybody is so impotent within their life circumstance that no one can really do anything or have any idea of what's happening. Like, you know, I'm critical of the media, but I don't mean to be critical of the people there who are kind of just doing their job. They have no idea of what's all involved and what's happening themselves. They've been duped. You know, and then people get into situations, and if they begin to rebel against the control and that, then, you know, you can be intimidated and fear, and they have all kinds of goon tactics, you know, to control people who step out of line or creating problems for them, you know. So, anyway, okay, we're going to be, we got about 10 more minutes, Jim, and then this lady's coming in. You are going to be able to stay on in the background while okay. Sandra's speaking, okay. And I know I have a certain line of inquiry. I don't even know that she's there, but she may be and may call in. So just yeah. We still have about 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well.
Okay.
I just wanted to, you know, we were talking about, like I was talking earlier about self-remembering, and I just had a thought about that, too, which was that...
Well, we were talking about that. Yeah, I'm sorry. That was so important when you were talking about that.
What I was going to mention too. Again, it's like, you know, what astounds me and sort of interests me in like I say, in writing this book about your career. But it's your career that interests me on a certain level. But it's just like this whole. It's applicable to many, many other people too. This journey, you know, and how your understanding of things changes so drastically. You know, it really is yeah. education in the sense of it brings out that which is within. But I remember when I first started to try to self-remember, my understanding of self-remembering was like, oh, to try to hold the experience. So I am here, just that, you know. And then I see, you know, in one of your books, you quote from William Patrick Patterson's book, Gurdjieff says, I am, always, I am. Never forget, little by little, your I shall make contact with your essence. It is necessary to repeat it many times. And that to try to do that is one thing, but I realized that over the years, like, even how I say, you know, well, when I try to say I am sometimes is a meditation, but where I say it, I used to say it from my head. Now I try to say it, feel it in my heart, you know.
Exactly, Jim. Exactly.
In my chest, you know, like,
yeah.
And it's funny, like, one day I was doing it not too long ago, and I could feel this sort of power in my chest, you know. It was really quite a startling experience, and I realized, oh, I'm really doing it, you know, and then I started thinking about it, which sort of interrupted it a bit, but then I went back, and I could feel like I was centered, not in my head, but rather in my heart, like in the upper right part of my heart and my chest, you know, and it had a completely qualitatively different feel to it, and I realized, you know, even this practice of self-remembering, I mean, there's so many other aspects of it, too. It's like, what self are you trying to remember, you know? Well, I used to try to remember myself like Jim Moffat, this person, you know, the sleepwalker, but now I realize I'm trying to remember something more essential. I'm trying to remember my connection with the divine. There's a whole variety of different aspects to it. But
yeah.
even that central idea of like, well, where do you try to remember yourself? I don't try to remember myself in my head so much anymore. I try to remember myself in my heart.
Yeah. And you know what also I would really do, emphasize in self-remembering? Sometimes, like Gurdjieff says in self-remembering, you want to self-sense.
Yeah.
And see, now I've realized that how consciousness in the human body is connected to blood flow.
Right.
This is in all mystical teachings. Your soul life is connected to your breath, and the life comes into the body through the heart and the flow of blood. And this is in all the mystical teachings. Okay. So firstly, I was going to say about when you sense yourself, try to feel your whole body as a whole, like feel your blood flow in your body. And you can learn to become established in the feeling of your inner blood flow all through your body. That's one thing. Another thing about the heart, in a way, the heart is an empty space. So if you are centered in the heart, sometimes it's like you feel something in a more discrete area, but in a way what it is it's like there's this spacious space, empty space within the heart. Mm-hmm. Like in mystical teachings, there's an empty space within the heart wherein God's secrets can be revealed. But normally people in life have so much clutter, they're never aware of that empty space. So there's so much clutter that they never get rid of the clutter to stay in the empty space to allow God's mysteries to be revealed. You have to kind of clear away all the stuff and then clear your heart, and then that empty space within that, things will be revealed to you. So we've got to get to that level of abiding in the emptiness of the heart. See, normally everyone's... those are just a couple. But this practice of self-remembering, God bless Gurdjieff for bringing this into the world. It's a practice that just magically transforms one's life if you stay with it and deepen your mystical studies. Nothing, as you were saying before, Jim, no one in the psychology literature tries to study consciousness by waking up and becoming more conscious.
Yeah.
Whereas all the mystics of the yogis, whomever, they try to study consciousness by waking up and developing. And then you can begin to understand what consciousness is. These little pea brains, they just think about consciousness in their head, and then they think consciousness is thinking and the ego and the mind, and it's complete illusion.
Yeah, and if
but
you
that's how they approach the study of consciousness,
if
with
you look
the mind. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, if you look at the mystical traditions, I mean, there are a variety of practices. Everybody understands meditation, but there's sacred dances, there's breathing, there's actual crafts and working. There are so many different fasting. There's so many different
too. There's so much misunderstanding of things too. Like I see how people think you meditate, and everyone thinks that meditating is trying to clear your mind. Okay, but no, that's not it. In meditation, try to abide within the heart. That's what we want to do. See, everybody thinks you try to stop your mind. You want to is my duck here? My duck? They're hungry. Oh, show me the wings. Flap, 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 flap. You know what the ducks are called? North, south, east, and west. Oh, no, sorry. They're earth, they're fire, air, earth, and water. They've got these beautiful four ducks, Peking ducks. They've been such a thrill. It's nice, all the beauties in life. Oh, hear them? Hear them?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I was going to say, you know what, just again, like you were talking about, nobody tries to change their consciousness. In that book by Blackmore, where she's talking to these people, and she asks them, you know, has studying consciousness changed your life at all? And
yeah.
A lot of them say, no, not really, you know, sort of like it's what I do at the office. Some say, well, in some ways, you know, but it's interesting. And like I mentioned to you the other day, so far in the book, all the people I've read, if you looked at what they say about consciousness, really, all they talk about is people's brains, and all they talk about in their brains is perception. They don't even, it's not even about thinking, which really has shocked me, that the material I've read so far, is it's all like psychophysics, you know? So you wouldn't even need a body, according to these people, in terms of, to be conscious. All you need is a brain, like, you know?
That's right, exactly.
In the vernacular, and literally, they're head cases. I mean, you know, they don't even talk about subcortical mechanisms, like in the spinal column. They don't talk about the endocrine system. They don't talk about the circulation of the blood. You know, I can tell you, like my consciousness, when I've had it, as you say, when you have a meal, blood goes to your stomach, you know, so you feel heavy. When you're sexually aroused, blood goes to your sexual organs, you know.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, you bang your thumb, pain, you get, you start to pulse in your thumb, you know. Like, I mean, there's a million different ways where blood circulation makes you conscious in different areas of your body, but you'd never know it reading this book. I mean, it's just completely beyond the scope of what they talk about. It's completely hilarious on one level, really.
Yeah, I mean, you begin to see how these people approach consciousness using the mind, the great slayer of the real.
Yeah.
So then they think the consciousness consists in their minding because they're intellectually centered. You have to be to kind of get a PhD and become a scientist, you know?
Yeah.
You develop your mind, usually at the expense of other centers.
Yeah.
So you're not developed emotionally or physically. You know, a human being needs to develop in all three aspects of yourself if you want to attain the fourth level of development. You have to develop physically, emotionally, and mentally, and then you get to the realm of spirit.
One other thing, too, when you were talking about trying to be aware of the blood, I don't know, I think it's actually, it may be from, I'm not really sure where I read this, but I think it was in a Gurdjieff book, and it may have even been Uspensky, but he talks about sometimes trying to be aware of your pulse, like just to feel your pulse, like, but through your whole body as a way of remembering yourself. And I've had experiences with that, which is really, you know, you can actually feel your entire body pulsing, which is quite an extraordinary experience. It gives you a very different sense of yourself. And Gurdjieff was, I mean, in terms of his teaching, one of the main things that he did was he worked very much with people in terms of their physical bodies, trying to get them to sense things physically. It's to connect, because the senses really connect your emotions and your thoughts. You realize that your thoughts, your feelings, and your sensations are very intimately connected. You know, you have a certain thought, and there's a corresponding emotional state that goes with it, and a corresponding state of physical sensation that goes with it. And this is what we don't understand about ourselves. I mean, that's why we have so many physical and psychosomatic problems, because we don't understand how our emotional and intellectual states interact with our bodies and create these, you know, muscular armorings and all sorts of, you know, physical
within
problems.
The body. Yeah, the blockages within the body.
Yeah,
I see more and more lately also, like, the importance of understanding the breath.
Yeah,
and in this, my study of Kabbalah and Judaism, like, there are five levels to the soul, and each of those is connected to the breath at different levels. Okay. Now, you remember in Blavatsky, remember the eternal ceaseless breath is one of that's the supernal father, is this ceaseless movement or breath. Okay. And then that stepped down into a human being. Now, in your physical body, the soul life is passive. So if you want to experience the lowest level of your soul life, what you have to do is empty yourself and be passive to experience that first level of the breath in the body. And then the next level of the breath, you become, it's the modification of the individual, this higher breath kind of, that's more active. And then beyond that is where you begin to tap, like the divine breath. The divine breath kind of comes down into the individual divine breath and then into the body. So there's these levels. So we can connect to these higher levels of the breath, and as we connect to higher dimensions of the soul life. The breath goes through them all. Even when people pass over and they're in the astral planes, you're still breathing. You still live off the air and the elements in the air. See, the soul is connected to the breath. And people in life, what happens, they develop all this armoring and such, and then they deaden their breath. People have to start breathing more deeply down, more lower into their body to have a complete breath. Most people are in a chronic state of contraction or holding their breath.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. I don't know. We don't have any phone calls here. Anyone coming in? Okay, so we'll just kind of carry on.
So you're saying you have to engage in a higher order conspiracy, you know, because conspiracy means to breathe together, eh?
Oh, really?
To conspire is
to
breathe.
That's very interesting.
To conspire
that's
is
interesting.
The meaning of the word conspire is to breathe together. So if you have two people, you have a conspiracy because they're breathing together.
That's very, very interesting.
I love that.
You know, another thing connected to the breath that I think of is inspiration.
Yes, well, yeah.
You feel inspired. It's like you kind of like, you know, there's this enlivening that happens within you when you're inspired. It's like you feel a new breath within yourself.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting, conspire to breathe together. I guess that's like you share company and you conspire.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's like, well, consciousness is to know together. So con means together, you know, to do something together. Inspire is to breathe. So
That idea of consciousness as knowing together. See, that's what happened to me in these kind of mystical states I've been experiencing. It was like I kind of knew everything together and could see things. I could hold all these things that I know together in my mind. They're kind of all simultaneously.
Versus
normally, people go sequentially. They know this bit, and that bit, and then that bit. But I can kind of maintain all the bits together, and then it allows me, by holding them together, if they're truthful things, you can't hold falsehoods. You can't kind of hold them all together in consciousness because they don't really exist. It's hard explaining what I mean. Knowledge you can hold together simultaneously, and that is part of this expanded consciousness.
Yeah, it's like you say, in your normal thinking, you're thinking in a linear sequential way, but in a higher state of consciousness, when you actually have consciousness, you know things simultaneously all at once together, and you transcend the differentiation and the fractionation that's inherent in a linear sequential thought, and just know it all at once.
Exactly,
yeah.
Which is where everybody's stuck. Like, everybody's stuck in this, what the yogis call the monkeys of the mind. Stream of associations that go on in the head. People are always minding things. Like, consider this. Say I walk down the street in Ottawa. Most people, they walk down the street and they're thinking about, oh, you know, where they're going and what they're going to do or what happened and who said what. And they've got all these things going on in their mind while they walk down the street. Now, if a person has all these things going on down in their mind, which engages their attention and consciousness in their head as they walk down the street, then they'll be very little aware of what is around them. They won't be conscious in their movement, in their breath, in their feeling. So now I've learned that I can walk down the street and not be thinking. And I can have this higher order clarity of mind, and I can feel things all around me, and I can sense myself walking, and it's all enlivened by awareness in my breath. So when I walk down the street, like, I'm aware of where I am and what I'm doing in this kind of integrated consciousness. Whereas most people walk down the street, they think, oh, they're in their mind, and they're in the past, they're in the future, they're in imagination. So they're not awake to the real world. When you walk down the street, walk down the street, be breathing, be sensing yourself, waking up. Don't walk down the street and do everything in life while your mind just turns and turns and turns and turns. You've got to slay the dragons of the mind. That's another reference to the sword. Slay the dragons of the mind. You use the sword of spiritual knowledge to slay the dragons of the mind. Seven-headed dragons. Seven levels of deceit and falsity in things. So we have to kind of cultivate. See, people have lost their innate intelligence, because they've been so conditioned that they can no longer actively think where they, you think. Instead, it's hard to explain it, but people have, they've lost their natural intelligence. I mean, you think that, you know, how do millions of people in the United States, everyone forgot there were these huge explosions in Building 9/11. It was in the news. It was, you know, all over the place. But everybody forgot. Oh, I thought, or I was told, or bah, little sheep kind of, you know, what you were told. And so people are filled with all this false knowledge of what they've been told. And all of that false knowledge, if you want to know truth, you have to slay, you have to cut away this false knowledge and come back to what you really do know or do not know. And not just believe what you were told or what you saw on TV or what so-and-so said or you were led to believe. That's how the little sheep get led to slaughter. Like's happening now in America, around the world. The horrendous things that are happening. This is a very serious time in human history. Now, I think that humankind has to turn, you know, we have to deal with the beast in modern society if we're ever going to have a new world where people learn the mysteries of the heart and learn how to travel through the planets and explore the deep dimensions of what we are in our being. And this creation of animosities, pretending it's between religions, It that's how we've been deceived. The problem isn't between religions. It's people of different religious persuasions who should be joining together to slay the beast. That's what the problem is. And certainly not through violence. No good change in our society at this time is going to come around through violence. Violence is a method of the beast. You have to see that. Like, if people ever wake up and realize how they've been deceived, it's no good to go out and loot and burn or hurt anyone. That's stupid. That's stupid. You can't do that. That's, everybody has to learn the truth. That is what needs to be done. You know, if the beast is ever slayed and his assets pass into the hands of humanity, the human race, to build a new world free of the beast, we don't want to go out and destroy all these assets because the beast had control of them. We just get rid of the beast and then, like the media. I mean, imagine what the people in the media would feel like if all of a sudden they could be honest in their reports and not just be censored and controlled. You know, they would be liberating to them. Imagine the people in Hollywood who are... The knowledge of 9/11 is throughout Hollywood, even though there's only a couple of brave souls there brave enough to say anything about it. But a lot of people know. It's widely known by millions of people throughout the world, you know. And the rest of the people are the sheep.
But you're wrong in another sense, because it's widely not known by millions of people throughout the world. I mean,
Jim.
No, you're saying that millions of people know this, but I'm saying that on the other side of it, millions of people don't believe that. And I mean,
the majority don't.
Yeah,
the majority are still.
You know, recently a poll in the United States showed that 50% of Americans still believe that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. I mean, which was the original justification for the Iraqi war, which is complete nonsense. I mean, it's been proved over and over again. That's a complete lie. You know, I want to actually.
Well, just to stay with that a moment. Like, even that's such a. Who's got the weapons of mass?
Well, I mean. There's a 34,000.
Who's got it?
Is a 34,000-pound? Is a 34,000-pound bomb a weapon of mass destruction? That's what the American. That's what the Americans. They're called bunker busters. Yeah. That's what the American Air Force drops on the Iraqis. You know, is a chemical weapon a weapon of mass destruction? Of course it is. But so is a 34,000-pound bomb. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. The Americans.
I mean, it's so funny. You know, we go after someone thinking they have weapons of mass destruction with these huge armies, hordes of barbarians. Who have all the weapons of mass destruction. Like, they're distracting our attention outside, saying they might have weapons of mass, so we'll take all our weapons of mass destruction and we'll destroy them in case they have, and then, oh, well, that's a shame. Oh, they didn't have any weapons of mass. Oh, that's unfortunate.
Well,
Isn't that clever?
It's all news.
People are so, sorry?
It's all newspeak, you know. It's complete nonsense. But I want to at one point, I don't know if you remember this, but speaking of objective consciousness, I think Uspensky in one of his books, it may even be in In Search of the Miraculous, where he describes having these experiences like higher dimensions of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and he describes these experiences he had, and one of the things he said that he realized was the complete lack of justification for any type of violence, that he had like this objective insight into this, and that it was complete, you know, it was just like you could not defend violence on any level. And I always was struck by that, you know, he's having all these ideas, these realizations about the structure of higher dimensional space, and at the same time, oh, by the way, violence is no good, you know, which I thought was like incredible.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, there'll come a day when there aren't any weapons of mass destruction on the planet Earth. I mean, they're the scourge of humanity. I mean, you build them and then you use them, you know, or you use them to control and intimidate.
Well, I guess it's possible to agree with you and disagree with you, eh? I mean, I as much as I agree with you that they shouldn't exist, I'm not so sure that I believe that they won't exist. I'm not sure that, I mean, it's certainly, the aim is the proper aim, is to rid ourselves of these things, but I'm not, I don't know.
I mean, imagine if we in the world could take the wealth put into weapons of mass destruction to build a new world. Imagine.
Well, then,
trillions and trillions. And instead of, like, warring and fighting around the world, if there were, I mean, I think you'd probably need a UN with forces, like a world kind of government or something with forces. But eventually not that. You wouldn't need it. If you had the same society, you wouldn't need weapons.
Well, as I told you, we were talking about earlier, before we came on the air, about 65 years ago, Henry Miller wrote an essay called "Murder the Murderer," in which he voiced his opinion that really no government had the right to ask anybody to kill anybody, and this is on the eve of World War II. And then he completed the essay after World War II, and he says exactly all the things you've just said. He said, you know, we in America. We, you know, our power of our people, the intelligence of our people, you know, we could make the world into something that we wouldn't even recognize if we channeled it into something constructive rather than to all these forces of destruction and negativity. And I mean, you know, as I say, that was 65 years ago he wrote that. I read that essay today. That is by far the most insightful analysis of everything that's happened over the last 65 years that I've read, you know. It's just like, it's right on the money, because Miller starts with the premise he doesn't buy into any of the bullshit of anybody. He doesn't believe any government. He just says, you know, governments don't have the right to tell people to go out and kill other people in order to preserve the state, because the state's always promising, oh, I'm going to make you free, I'm going to make you democratic, I'm going to make you liberated. No, the state is going to perpetuate the state, and the individual has to take responsibility for the individual. But as he said, it's interesting to dream as to what life would look like if we put all that energy and all that money and all those resources. I mean, you think of the United States, the most powerful country in the world, if they could put their energies into something other than building up the military budget. You know, they might be, we'd all be a lot farther ahead. I want to read you a quote, though, about objective knowledge from Gurdjieff.
Okay.
This is Uspensky, recalls Gurdjieff's comment. He says, Gurdjieff says, one of the most central ideas of objective knowledge is the idea of the unity of everything, of unity in diversity. But objective knowledge, the idea of unity included, belongs to objective consciousness. With objective consciousness, it is possible to see and feel the unity of everything. But for subjective consciousness, the world is split up into millions of separate and unconnected phenomena. Attempts to connect these phenomena into some sort of system in a scientific or a philosophical way can lead to nothing, because man cannot reconstruct the idea of the whole starting from separate facts, and they cannot divine the principles of the division of the whole without knowing the laws upon which this division is based.
Wow, that's amazing. See, that's what it's like. Everybody, there's so many little bits, and you have all these little bits of everything, and you can never kind of fit it all together. People need to learn from basic principles as explicated in the sacred teachings of the world, about fundamental principles of creation, the laws of 3 and 7. Those are teachings of higher knowledge. People can't comprehend it. Their little pea brain, they think there's a head and a heart and a left brain, right brain, science, religion, life, death, mind, body, all these dualities are little pea brains. The ministry of doublethink with the two towers, all these things fit together. They're all the dualities of the jackasses, kind of, the dualities of modern thought. I remember studying consciousness in the 80s, HM, and everybody was the duality of human consciousness. Oh, yeah. And you read someone like Ornstein, he was so stupidly confused, like it's pathetic sometimes. When you begin to wake up and you see the superficiality of the past century of modern education and psychology, it's incredible. There's been an intentional attempt to deceive people and to take them away from religion, to try to get rid of the idea of the life of the spirit and soul, because the lunatics want your soul. The more people believe that there's something higher, you can escape from the lunatics. Now, people can't understand what I'm saying, but this is something they can't comprehend because they can't see into the nature of things as I can. I don't know how people might grasp what I'm saying, but this is absolutely serious. Not imagination. You know, your soul can pass to the moon. I saw my father the other day, who's 85 and dying of Alzheimer's, and I realized how empty he is, how he, through his life, has built so little up in store for what is to come. And I could see my father. I was very sad that, like, his soul is going to the moon. I can see it in him. He has not awakened enough or developed enough. Everything in life conspired against it, as it does for the masses of humankind. Everyone thinks they're a magician when really they're pea brains. They're pea brains. No one understands the mystical traditions. No one's understood their own esoteric teachings. Christians don't understand esoteric Christianity. Muslims don't understand their own, the Sufism and the mystical element of Islam. They don't understand it themselves. They only take the outer form. People need to look at the mystery teachings of the world religions, which is higher dimensional knowledge that we can't understand. And no one in science, psychology, the educational system even attempts to understand these things. You can't study these things even in the educational system. They won't allow it, because they're so fearful of these higher dimensional teachings, which allows the souls to escape the control of the black magician and the evil queen and all the hordes of barbarians that they've got. People have no idea how all the insidious sickness that has permeated all of modern society. You know, we live in countries where we're ruled by psychopaths and criminal syndicates, and people are led to believe, oh, I thought we had a government that we elected. What happened to that? It's such an illusion. People need to wake up and see, you know, this is serious in yourself at this time in human history. We are coming down upon times of trials and tribulations. The beast is scared because he feels that his empire is beginning to crumble because of the 9/11 truth coming out, which undermines everything. I mean, why are we conquering the Middle East if really there was people in the government and things like that who did the whole thing? And here we are running around the world trying to kill people and take their lands and oil, when really it was a criminal element within the American society. It's incredible. It's so sad for the life of humankind on this planet that these horrible things are done. The people have accumulated such wealth and yeah, you know, I see Silverstein, you know, he got $7 billion in insurance payout. And I wonder, and he says he blew up Building 7 because of his humanitarian concern for the people of New York who had had traumas. So he blows up another 50-story building and collects money on it. And then he says something out of it, yeah, his humanitarianism. So I wonder how many of his $7 billion did he give to any child anywhere in the world? it costs $30 a month to sponsor a child. Did he sponsor one child? You know, it's unspeakable, the sins. When I can see it and all, that's when the wrath of God wells up within me, and I'm just so, I began feeling the wrath of God as I saw into what's happening in this planet. And my whole house around me began to shake. Like I have an angel up on my computer, was kind of shaking. The whole table is just the spin of that. I just felt the wrath of God so much coming down upon them, seeing such sinfulness, how people could degenerate in human society to such a low level as we're at now. Not tomorrow, not as a possibility, but now that's already the case. And the sheep are being led to slaughter. And if they don't wake up, whether you wake other people up, learn about what's real in the world. Don't, you know, turn your TV off, throw away your newspapers, wake up to the real world. You know, go on the internet if you want more. The internet's much more free and not owned by these people, you know. This is a terrible problem for the human race, and we're at a very critical time in human history. I really see, you know, we've got 6 years. It's 2006. New millennium is supposed to be 2012, and I hope by that time we won't have weapons of mass destruction, and there'll be a lot of people in the Bay of Pigs in Cuba in their own private hell where they belong. I'm just, that's the wrath of God in me, Jim, that wells up within me when I look into what they have done to decent society. You know, these people, they don't want people. They want to control other people. Like, who in life wants to be controlled by other people? They're afraid of other people being free. They want your soul. They want your blood. People think this is just crazy, you know. This is not crazy. This is, you just can't comprehend what is happening because you don't have a broad enough vision to see. I had to go down to the word wrath, that kind of wrath. You hear what I say, Jim?
How's your
That's
blood?
The kind of wrath that wells up in me when
How's your blood pressure?
Sorry?
How's your blood pressure? You should feel the circulation of your blood at this very moment.
So sometimes that kind of wells up with me, and I feel this kind of movement that I just, you know, I have to try to do what I can do to try to help save souls and save humanity at this time when we all need to make up. For people who listen to this show, if you thought today was good, tell people about it. Spread the word. BBS may have me for another time slot we may try to work out. So please, spread the word. This is a different type of teaching. I can help you as lost sheep as you are. People are lost sheep. They're being deceived, and they're going to be cut down by the barbarians if they don't wake up and begin to look around them and come back to what is real in life. Life means nothing. Everybody's so afraid of death. We're all going to die. We're all going to die. No one avoids physical death. So if given that that's the case, you need to build up something in store for you to escape the control of the moon to pass into the sun and the higher realms. Don't be consumed by the moon. Now, to most people, I probably sound crazy, but there's such depth to what's being said here. Okay, I hope people go to my website. If anyone ever wants to donate any penny to me, I'm kind of pleading at times for people to buy my books to do something. And it kind of doesn't work out. I really quite struggle. But anyway, okay, thanks everyone. Remember, like, try to learn to remember to live in the heart, learn to live in love and in truth, and that's what's important. Okay, so I pray for you all out there that you keep up the good fight. Become warriors, you know, spiritual warriors, warriors of light and love in the world, not lunatics. You don't want to be a lunatic. I'm really trying to tell you seriously. What are you in life? Are you a spiritual warrior, or are you a lunatic?